for the weekend, a preview to Rock Auk, an indigenous music festival that launches from Juneau next month. And Stephen Kachung Blanchette is here to explain why the festival is important to the indigenous music scene, not just here in Alaska, but worldwide. And also, a new autism therapy program at Bartlett Hospital, how it can help families cope with so many of the challenges. In our forecast, mostly cloudy tonight, but a chance of scattered rain showers with patchy fog tomorrow morning. But clouds will decrease with highs in the mid-40s, clearer and cooler days ahead for the weekend, with highs in the lower 40s, lows in the upper 20s. Thank you for being here with us on Juneau Afternoon. I'm Rhonda McBride, and you're listening to Bumiyaw, one of the music groups featured at Rock Auk, Juneau's very first Indigenous music festival. So, everybody, mark your calendars, November 5th and 6th. It is the start of what Rock Auk hopes will be the beginning of a new tradition for this community and beyond. And a lot of Alaska Natives have dreamed of having an event like this, and perhaps none more so than Stephen Blanchette or Kachung. You may know him from his band Bumiyaw, which we're listening to right now. Music critics have dubbed this the most famous Inuit band in the world, but Kachung is also one of the main organizers of Rock Auk, and we are so excited to have you here today, Stephen Blanchette, to whet our appetites for what sounds like could be a watershed moment for Indigenous music here in Alaska and beyond. So, Stephen, are you really excited about this upcoming festival? Are you starting to feel tingles in the back of your neck?
Oh, my goodness. It's funny. Joy, my wife, just asked me that about an hour ago. She's like, how are you feeling? And I mean, and it's just, it's hard to explain because this is a, this has been a dream for many, many years, a long time. I think the first time I ever proposed an Indigenous music festival was about 20 years ago. And so this has been something that's been decades in the work.
But the interesting thing about it is it seems like it's more than just a first for Juneau.
Oh, yeah. No, it's not just a first for Juneau. It's not just a first for Alaska. It's a first for the United States. I mean, there's Indigenous music festivals. Sure, there are. There's some in Canada that I've played at and elsewhere around the world. And so there's actually a group of folks that come together, different countries, and they actually come together and they talk about like who's out there, who's the next band, who's the amazing artist that you have to have. And they plan out their festivals like years in advance. And the United States has never been a part of that group because there isn't a Indigenous-led Indigenous music festival. There are world music festivals, but that's different. What I've experienced in my almost 30-year career is, you know, whenever we played festivals around the states, we were always kind of, there is like a world stage often, or an Indigenous stage that's kind of off in the corner of the festival grounds. And that's just been our experience. And so that's why I was like, this is something that is just a necessity for Indigenous artists, especially U.S.-based Indigenous artists, to have the opportunity not only to perform at a festival, but to headline at one.
So what is the potential for putting Juneau on the map for this kind of thing?
Oh, it's already like there's already a buzz going on. I have friends all across the United States in the music industry, folks that are part of like organizations that actually work on bookings and agencies and venues and all that kind of stuff. That buzz has already happened. I've been looking at some of the reposts that are happening on social media. There's places like Western Arts Alliance that are just like, about time, watch this festival, you know? So it's just like already getting that buzz.
Well, that is really exciting because Juneau seems positioned to kind of become an Indigenous arts capital, at least for the Pacific Northwest. But do you think that this festival, even though a lot of it is apparently virtual, that it will have this kind of worldwide draw, perhaps, that will bring more things here?
That's what we're hoping for. You know, this is an interesting opportunity, right? Especially now within the pandemic that we're in and going virtual. We're going to do a big push, just really get the word out of this festival. So we're kind of thinking of it now as kind of like a trailer or kind of a just kind of drawing back the curtains a little bit and seeing a little bit of like what really can happen if we put on a full-fledged multi-day, multi-stage, multi-venue festival. And with double the artists, we have 13 artists coming in and performing at this festival, both virtually and coming in person. Because that was the hope, that we were going to be having an in-person audience. But, you know, with the way that the cases are happening, it's just, we thought it best to just make it the best experience that people can get on the virtual stage. So that's what we're putting all our focus on, is the look and the feel of like what Indigenous festival in beautiful indigeneity on the virtual stage.
Beautiful indigeneity. I like that phrase. So is there some part of this, though, that's hybrid, that is in person? Or is it all going to be online? Because I know initially in the planning stages, they were talking about some in person. But then again, we've had a big turnaround in the COVID situation since then.
Correct. You know, unfortunately, with the turnaround in the COVID situation, there isn't going to be an opportunity to watch, you know, the live performances. But we will have, you know, like I mentioned, 8 artists coming in and recording and filming at the Centennial Hall. And so we have those scheduled out from, you know, the morning up until like late afternoon. And then we're going to just basically at like 7 o'clock, we'll have all those recorded components from the artists from the first day. And then we're going to push that out live. So it'll be a live stream. So what we're hoping for is to find some venues, some partners, so we can get together and have some watch parties. Maybe look out for some of the official watch parties. We haven't really quite made those solid decisions yet, but that is something that we're definitely talking about. And we want people to think maybe there's a chance for us to come together, at least watch this virtually together.
You know, this might be a silver lining in some ways for some musicians, because I'm thinking of one of them that may be coming, Whitney Youngman from Anchorage.
Oh, yeah.
She's an amazing blues singer, and I've heard her perform off and on over the years, but I don't think she has any recordings.
Yes, that's what this festival is all about, is who are those, like, amazing Indigenous artists that just don't get the opportunity to get to a venue like this, right? But they are like phenomenal. Whitney has like a soulful voice. Oh my goodness. She's so good, and she's amazing at the guitar. So that's going to be just a treat for everybody to see her maybe for the first time ever. So that's one of the missions of this festival, is to create these opportunities for Indigenous artists to have a chance to perform at a festival, right? That's going to be our focus. We're going to be looking for these folks from, you know, when we're done with this one, we'll probably take a little break, but we're going to start then thinking of those artists in 2023. Who are those artists going to be? And start fundraising, hitting the ground and getting the support from the community and those sponsors, that so that we can bring more. But yeah, she's like one of those artists that is an example that hasn't put out those big official recordings. She's not on Spotify. You can find her on SoundCloud and some of the other sites like that. But, you know, you think of like Spotify as like the biggest, right? They're the biggest of all the streaming sites and platforms, but she's not on there. So not a lot of people would have get a chance to see her, but this is her kind of big debut and coming out.
And that's going to be exciting. Well, you know, I remember when you were a young gun, you and your brother, Philip, and you were starting to debut, and that was back in the 1990s. And I have to have a little disclosure here. I do know your mom, Marie Mead. Yeah. We've been friends for years. And I remember when you were testing the waters with Bumia, and there was this amazing sound, these African-American gospel sounds, harmonies merging with Yupik drum beats and Yupik language. And the funny thing is I recall that your mom said that all of this started at fish camp outside of Bethel. Is that a true story?
Yeah, it is true. It is. I mean, we come from like a really super musical family, a family that told stories. I grew up listening to traditional stories, hearing those around the kitchen table around while they're drinking coffee and sayuk, while we were cutting fish on the by the smokehouse. One of the things we used to do, me and the cousins, little cousins, we would just be trying to get the attention of all our aunties and uncles. And we had put on these performances on the beach of our fish camp, the banks of the Kuskokwim River. Just our fish camp was probably about 5 miles downriver from Bethel. And so that's where we spent our summers ever since I was a baby, right? But that was one thing that we loved because we had a musical family. And sometimes our aunties would join in and jump up. And like my aunt Isku would jump up there and she'd grab her guitar and just start singing and picking. And my uncle Trim as well, guitar player. My mom's a guitar player. That's a little thing that people don't know.
She's
a guitar player. And so like we heard and saw like our aunties and uncles just picking at the guitar and singing these songs and so many of them in Yupik.
But that is what makes it so amazing is there's some authenticity that breeze through your music. And of course, your father is African-American. And so, and I've heard that your grandfather would come and visit and there would be these amazing song sessions of people just singing in the kitchen. So you grew up with all those influences. And when did it all kind of come together, this fusion of Yupik culture and African-American culture sort of become, and now you've coined the phrase, Yufrican.
Yeah, Yufrican. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. I don't know. You know, I think the way we came across this style was when I was getting ready to get married and I wanted to dance at my wedding, right, at the reception. And Philip had been with my mom and living with my mom, and I was living with my dad because they had split when I was very young. And so for a period of time, he spent like a couple years with her and just kind of following her around. And they would go to dance practices. There was Chuna McIntyre, Vernon Jimil Al-Rat, Teresa John. So he got to be immersed with like the Yupik songs and dances at a very early age, right? And so I had him to come over to my apartment to teach me some simple songs teach me a simple one to dance at my wedding. And when he did that, you know, just me being kind of the goofy guy I am and just kind of messing with my brother, I started singing harmony to a song that he was trying to teach me. And he was just like, hey, quit screwing around, quit messing around. But then I said, just keep singing. And I sang and sang the harmony to it. And we just like, we're like, whoa, that sounds pretty cool. Drove over to my dad's house that evening and brought him down and sang a song to him. And he got blown away and was like, you guys stumbled upon something. You have something. And he got us all riled up. And that night, when Philip was driving back to Anchorage, this was in Wasilla, and he was driving back to Anchorage, he wrote our first song. And 2 weeks later, we had our first performance at the University of Alaska Anchorage at a reception celebrating the native graduates of UAA.
My goodness. You know, and I have memories of a time in Bethel when you were about to perform for the Jemai Festival. And John Active, who's a well-known Yupik storyteller and often an MC at the Jemai Dance Festival, was kind of ruminating a bit, saying, you know, I don't know how these elders are going to take hearing Yupik lyrics to kind of a rock and roll theme. And he said, I don't know how they're going to like it. But did you have any trepidation about how that would be accepted by fusing these cultures?
Yeah. Of course. But we also had confidence because the elders that we had shared it with, elders like with my mom, Marie Tyson, Ben Snowball, David Chinar, those elders that were readily available in my circle there, they were 100% in support of us and loved it. So we knew that we had these elders that loved it. So we were like, we had an inkling that it was going to be okay, but we did have some trepidation about it. But as soon as we sang that first song, Jaya Kanahua, you know, we hit it, Jaya Kanahua, and then we hit Munkasu, Zamalga Yuganka, And then as soon as we hit that note, the entire building all stood up and started cheering and clapping. It was the most incredible experience of my performance life, my career, of any experience I've ever had in my life, next to the birth of my children. You know, it was just like amazing. And so like we were just like two measures into our song, and we had a standing ovation with our home community. And so right then and there, we knew what we were doing was right.
And thereafter, and okay, all the kids across the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta were copying you at their own fish camps, trying to, yeah, trying to replicate that. How did that feel when you knew that kids were copying you?
that was what our dream was. We were hoping to find the next Bumiwas, right? We were hoping to start a kind of a music industry in Alaska of indigenous music. And you know, honestly, Philip and I had this idea that we were going to be these like big music moguls and producing these groups, right? But it just didn't happen. But it's now coming. It's like it has been happening. We have artists like Byron Nikolai from back home who has, he's just blown up, man. He's like so huge. And like, he's like our Justin Bieber. Like he blew up on YouTube with I Sing You Dance. And so it's been awesome to be able to work with him and to connect with him. You know, he's on my most recent album. He's singing and rapping in Yupik. We take him on with performances with us. Since he came on, we were just like, we have to mentor this young man and to make sure that he'll make it, right? Because the music industry is a tough industry.
Well, I will try to find him so we can hear a little bit of him. But I have Arias Hoyle ready to go with Tranquility. And he's another musician from the Juneau area.
Yeah.
And it's so exciting, you know. The Tlingit Haida Central Council actually funded a music video of his. So it's like a whole different environment than what you and your brothers started out. And that's kind of exciting. Before we hear a little bit of him, tell us a little bit about him. I know that you've been working with him, and it's not clear who is mentoring who necessarily.
Yeah, no, I know. AJ, Arias, Air Jazz. Oh my gosh, this guy is... he's a beast. He's so amazing. My wife's sister was like, sent me a text message and it had a link to a YouTube video. And she was like, you have to watch this. And so I like watched it. Like, I was like, what is this? And then like, I was like, who is this guy? You know, right up, I was just like, I have to find out who this guy is. And he went and performed at the Elders and Youth. The Elders and Youth brought him there because, you know, he was just blowing up, right? And so I was just like a fanboy. I was like, where is he? He's here somewhere. And I did a beeline, looked for that big afro. And I found, I saw that huge afro, and I went straight to him. I was like, what's up, bro? And you know, right then and there, we hit it off. Like we known each other for a long, long time. And I knew that I was going to be collaborating with him. And my most recent album, he's on two of my songs, you know, one rapping in Tlingit, and the other one on that day, rapping in English. And that's one of the, we've done two music videos together. Yeah, I'm looking forward to doing many, many more projects with him. So I'm so, so happy that these young guns like Byron, Ukitlak, and Air Jazz are just coming onto the scene.
And the interesting thing about Air Jazz, which you can relate to, is like Bumia is cross-cultural. That you mm-hmm. have African-American rap sounds, kind of the driving rhythm of that, with Tlingit language. Why is that so powerful?
I don't know. It's just real. It's like a real connection. That's that what he has. He has a serious love for his culture and for his language. And that is undeniable. And it comes out in his music and his performance. And like a young man like that is like, he's kind of like, he's a unicorn because he's so young and he came out fully baked, right? He knew who he was. He knew what he wants to do, and he was doing it and doing it so well. Like, it's so rare to see someone just come out of the gates like, just, this is me. Boom. Yeah, it's only going to get better.
Well, with a buildup like that, we got to hear him. We'll listen to him, go to a quick break and come back. And then we'll hopefully get Byron Nicolai queued up here, because that's one that brings a lot of joy every time I hear him. So here we go.
Yeah, let's do it. Rock Ock.
Tranquility is a powerful thing, man. You'll achieve it. You just gotta die first.
I'm a sin, namaste, my mistake. Do not resuscitate, cause I don't wanna stay. Namaste, I'ma say, namaste. On this lay, I've gone astray. He's lost his way, yet the ancestors still with me. So I've achieved tranquility. I just gained an ability. I have complete tranquility.
Crystal here, crystal clear as a pure stream. We disappear, dismissal of fear, your dream. A free spirit who steers clear of the fury. I feel curious, it's queer, yet it cures me. Gave from my blessings, I'm positive destined. Being courageous, contagious, I'm positive testing. Deposited checks into my check-in, I reckon. My life's been directed by economic monarchs from heaven. Although I don't have a soul, insurance. I'm making waves, riding currents. Dying sure is just on the surface. In no rush, it's lush. I have no sense of time. A loss of consciousness is thoughtless as end to mine. You've left your eyes and without...
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
It's Third Eye Quest.
So that's Byron Nicolai from Tuxuk Bay, heartthrob of the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. And we're back on Juno Afternoon. I'm Rhonda McBride. I'm here with Stephen Kachung Blanchette to talk about the upcoming Indigenous Music Festival, Rock Ock. And of course, Stephen, what is it about Byron Nicolai that is so irresistible? But every time I've ever seen him perform, and it's been in Anchorage between audiences of different cultures, one thing I see is everybody smiles.
Yeah. He brings joy, man. He's such a beautiful man. Like what you're saying, heartthrob. Like he's so pretty, man. He's such a beautiful young man. It's like, and just a beautiful smile. And I just love being around him.
Well, I'm going to bring up a little more of his music, but tell us what we should be listening to, what you really appreciate.
This is okay. I mean, to rap in Yupik, I mean, it's not a stretch, but because our Yupik language is it's a vowel, consonant, vowel, consonant, vowel, consonant. So it does flow. Like when you're saying, you know, it's a da 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 da. So it's a very rhythmic language. So he does it so well. I love that he's just taking it on, this challenge of like putting out music after music, song after song in his Yupik language. It's just beautiful.
All right, let's hear a little bit more. I can tell that you just really enjoy the groove that he cuts. You know, given that artists like him are way more popular and well known than, say, you were when you were starting out, is it still a struggle for Indigenous musicians in some way?
Oh man, the struggle is real. Oh gee whiz, there's just like not opportunities. There aren't opportunities. The people like on most venues, most places won't reach out to Indigenous artists and won't give artists the chance. So when you want to do something like this, you know, it takes a lot of effort to be a full-time musician, to be a touring musician. It takes everything out of you. And so it's so difficult. So I'm so happy that we're creating this opportunity like this so that maybe someone, some other festival that's out there in the world will look at who we're rocking at Rock Ock and say, I want this person. I need this band. And so I'm hoping that this will launch the careers of many, many artists to play on that world stage.
Well, I've got another artist queued up, and you said that this group was one of your favorites, but I suspect that most of them are your favorites or they wouldn't be on the list. But this one is titled Home by, am I saying it right, Pura Fay?
Yeah, Pura Fay.
Pura Fay. So tell me about this group.
Oh my gosh, Pura Fay is the creative and the leader of a group called Yulali. They are an amazing, they were a three-part singing group. They sang primarily in a cappella, but singing in the indigenous language with kind of drum songs, but with an amazing harmony. And Pura Fay is their leader. And what you're about to hear is more of her solo projects that she's been working on most recently.
All right, well, let's give it a go here.
2, 3, and...
Oh my goodness, what a voice.
Yeah. They're my favorite. Yulali is probably the best and most amazing indigenous group out there. We first met them back in 1996 at a Indian market in Wisconsin at a performance there that we performed at. And since then, we've done probably maybe 15 or so shows over the last almost 20, 25, 26 years. And yeah, they're one of my favorites. So I'm so happy to be able to bring her to Rock Ock, to bring her onto this stage. And I hope we get a chance to bring her many, many times.
So before we go, we should mention that there is a playlist on Spotify. So you can go to Spotify.
Yeah.
And how do you access that playlist of songs for the upcoming festival?
Well, the best way to do it is come to our website, rockockfestival.com. And that's rockaakwfestival.com. And that's there. You can get a list of all of the artists that will be performing, our Spotify list with the examples of their music. And then we even have music videos of all the artists that are on there and all of our amazing sponsors that have been helping us out with the festival. I mean, we just have to thank all of our sponsors as well. I mean, it's just like, it is taking a community to make this happen, and our community has come out in support of it. And so we're super happy. But that's one of the best places to do it. So this is brought on by Lincoln Haida, Juneau Arts and Humanities Council, Westaf, NEA, Sea Alaska Heritage, Gold Belt, K200, Alaska Airlines, and Sea Alaska. Those are some of our big major sponsors, along with other individual donors that have been giving.
You know, and I have to give a shout out to KXLL Chandra Boom, because she's been...
Oh, yeah!
Yay! She's been interviewing a lot of the artists. So you can hear more about them on KXLL in the next 2 weeks, pull from some of her interviews with the artists. But so I've got the Spotify list up here. And before we go, pick one for me to play and tell me why you chose that one.
Oh, my goodness. Let's go with Yatsin.
All right.
Yatsin.
So before we go here, I'm going to get Yatsin all ready to go. But tell me a little bit about him.
Yatsin, oh man, we are sitting in the midst of an indigenous pop explosion. There's so many beautiful things that are happening on the world of indigenous music and arts and television and film. We have Res Dogs. We have Rock Ock that's happening. I mean, there's Quanah has blown up onto the, like when she was at the Met Gala, she's blown up the internet. She's so beautiful. She's now a supermodel. And then we have Yachtseen, one of our local Southeast artists, Nicholas Galan, who signed with the legendary music label Sub Pop. I mean, these are like amazing things. So definitely give a shout out to Nicholas Galan of Yachtseen. So that's why I wanted you to play this song.
I will play this song in just a moment, but just another thought I'd like you to share with us is, you know, Nicholas is very much an activist, and his music as well as his art has been a vehicle for getting the message out about a lot of injustices, social injustices, not just for Native Americans, but across the country. And to me, that is also an important part of this, even though this music is so enjoyable, there's also some important messages there. Would you talk about that?
That's so true. I'm so glad you brought that up. I mean, a lot of us artists that are doing this for, I mean, very specific reasons. Bumyo does it for to save our language, to save our ways and our culture, our music, our traditional dancing, bringing light of inequality. Yachtseen and many of these artists talk about in their lyrics. I mean, they're not just doing, you know, saying lyrics and telling stories. They're really bringing light to different things that are happening around the world. I mean, I love how he brought messages about Standing Rock in his last album, racial inequality. I mean, all these things. And so that's what a lot of Indigenous musicians, that's what they stand for. That's what they're doing. And that's what Rock Ock is going to be standing for as well in our messaging, in the way our mission is created, the way that we portray our vision of who we are and what we are on Aquan territory and land. And this is what's so beautiful about Indigenous music is that love and that pure desire of telling their stories as Indigenous people now. And so it's like we're breaking stereotypes, man. We have hip hop artists, we have classical artists, jazz artists, we have funk and soul, and then we have traditional folk singer-songwriters. So it's like Indigenous music is so many different things. It's not just flutes and drums.
Amen. So we'll say goodbye for now. And I want to say that instead of saying just Goyana or Gunash Cheesh, I think I'll coin one of your words, Goyana Cheesh.
Yeah, I love it. Goyana Cheesh. Goyana Cheesh, everybody.
I love that. So here's to fusion. Here's to adventure. And definitely Rock Ock is one of those. So here we go. Yeah. Here's Yachtseen. And thanks for joining us, Steve. Really appreciate it having you,
Rhonda.
Steve Kachung Blanchette. From communication to interacting with people, children who are on the autism spectrum can face all kinds of challenges, as well as their brothers and sisters, the whole family. That's why Bartlett Hospital has developed a new therapy program to teach families and children with autism more coping skills. And here to tell us about how much this can make a difference, we have Jenna Wiersma. She is the Applied Behavior Analysis Director at Bartlett Regional Hospital. Welcome to our program, Jenna. And I think a lot of parents are going to be interested in what you have to say here today.
Well, thank you so much for having me, and I'm happy to be here.
So maybe we should start off, you are the director of this program, Applied Behavior Analysis. What is that? I mean, it seems like a very technical term.
It's a great question. So Applied Behavior Analysis, or what we call ABA, is a behavioral therapy specifically designed for kids diagnosed on the autism spectrum. And it is a behavioral therapy that focuses on teaching social and communication skills and play skills and other skills that will help them with their interactions with their peers and others in their environment, as well as focusing on any reduction of maladaptive behaviors that may impede their ability to be a participant in the world around them.
So can you give us some examples of some things that kids with autism have adjusting to? I know that there's a wide spectrum, so it can differ. But so nothing is typically typical, so to speak. But maybe some examples that you could help us identify and gain some insight in how you can help someone adjust to that better.
Absolutely. And just like you said, once you know one kid with autism, you only know one kid with autism. So each one is so different and so individualized. But one example would be maybe we start working with a child who doesn't have any ability to play independently or with their peers, with kids their age. And so my staff and I might go in and I'll write a behavioral program that focuses on teaching play skills, both their independent play and teaching them how to be able to play with peers once they're ready, and really focusing on that. And for many kids, that's an important part of their socialization.
And I'm sure that even though they have a disability, they probably still feel left out of things or don't understand why people react to them the way that they do, because other kids do these things naturally and they apparently don't.
Absolutely. I see so many kids that I work with show interest in their friends and their peers and people around them, and they just can't quite figure out how to navigate some of the social pieces that you or I maybe know how to do naturally. And so those are skills that we want to focus on teaching in ABA, is those skills that they can use and things they can learn so that they can interact and be part of the world around them and be with their peers.
So give me an example of how you do this, because I mean, it's not just something that you just wing. It sounds like you've got to have the specific skills to teach this.
That's correct. So typically a process for that might be I as the board certified behavior analyst go in and do an assessment for a child and come up with goals alongside their parents and other providers, whether it's school teacher or their whoever's working with them in the school context. And I build a treatment program that focuses on each skill that they individually need to learn or can help them access greater social relationships. And then within that, I train my amazing ABA technicians, the people who are working one-on-one with each of the kids. I train them on those programs and they go into the kid's home or into school and implement those programs in those settings so that the child can learn those skills across all the environments that are important to them.
And how have you been able to see that it makes a difference? I mean, are there some success stories that you'd like to share with us in a general way?
That's a great question. Yeah, I would love to share, and I have so many, but really our success speaks for itself, because part of ABA therapy is that we're continuously taking data to ensure that what we're doing is working. And so we can, at the end of every therapy session with a child, look at their data and say, yes, they were successful in this skill today, or this is something we have to work on tomorrow. But I have worked with many kids in this field for many years, and I have seen a lot of children when we start have even lower verbal communication levels. And by the time we're working with them consistently throughout much of their childhood. They become active participants with their peers. They can develop friendships. They maybe have reduction in some of the maladaptive behaviors that they did before that were harmful to themselves or other people. And they seem to enjoy the social relationships that they're part of, and that they can be a good friend and understand emotions and how to regulate their own with their own coping strategies.
So tell us a little bit about your background, because this to me seems like it's a relatively new field. I mean, it's probably been growing and building, but you don't normally hear of programs like this offered by a hospital.
Yeah, so it's pretty great that Bartlett is taking on opening this type of program, because typically ABA is done by private clinics or by private organizations. And it is fairly new to the Juno community, but definitely not new in terms of a field of practice. But my background specifically is I've been working in the field of applied behavior analysis for about the past 10 or 11 years. And I have a master's degree in autism spectrum disorders and a second master's in applied behavior analysis. And I've been working as a board certified behavior analyst since 2015. So I've been working in the field here in Juneau for quite a while, and previously was working for a private entity and providing services that way. So ABA has been around in Juneau. It's just definitely a new program within the hospital context, and I'm thrilled that Bartlett's offering it, because we will have the capacity to help so many individuals across Juneau and Southeast Alaska, and this is just such a needed service. I'm really excited to get to be part of it.
So what kind of a staff do you have to support this?
I currently have a staff of 5 amazing ABA technicians. We just hired two additional. I had 3 already, and we've hired 2 additional. And those are the amazing staff that are going to provide that one-on-one direct therapy for the child in their home or in the school setting and collaborate with the school. And then there's myself as the director and the board certified behavior analyst overseeing all the programs. And then I have an amazing administrative assistant who takes care of all the business crossing of the T's and dotting of the I's, so to speak.
So you've got a team there, and have you anywhere reached your capacity to serve more children?
That's a great question. We have currently a waiting list of about 60 kids waiting to get therapy, and we have started providing therapy for the first 5. So we're up and running and getting things going and hoping to keep increasing our ability to take more kids off.
So if you want to get your child involved in the program, better get on the list then, is perhaps a good piece of advice.
I would definitely recommend that to families who are interested. The sooner you can get the kid on our list, the quicker we will be able to hopefully move through and get more people access to the therapy.
One thing I wonder about is it better for the child to start earlier, that maybe people wait too long to get their kids therapy? And is it easier for you to make changes when they're a little younger than as opposed being an adolescent or in middle school?
That is such a fantastic question, and you're really speaking to my heart, because my background is in early intervention. But yes, I definitely encourage parents of kids with a new diagnosis for their child, even though that can be a really difficult thing to navigate and to manage and can seem really scary and overwhelming, getting them on lists or getting them access to the services that you think are going to benefit them is only going to help them in the long run. And we actually know that through research, that early intervention is really important for kids in that young developmental stage. That's not to say it's ever too late to enroll your child if they're diagnosed in any type of therapy, but we know that the earlier they are given ABA, then they can make progress quicker and potentially even more growth.
So in parting here, I've always wondered what advice there could be for people at large in the community about how to interact with someone who appears to be autistic or shows symptoms of being on the spectrum. You know, a lot of times we just don't know how to act, how to behave. What advice can you give us to make things easier for that person?
That's a great question. I always recommend to people, parents included, that really I would approach it as believing the person can and treating them like you would treat anyone else until they show you that they need specific modifications or accommodations. So really letting that person take the lead within that interaction, but treating them like you would treat anybody else and kind of reading their body language or what they do or don't say to you as part of that interaction, letting them take the lead on how to interact in that social situation, I think is always what I recommend to people.
I wonder if people just, they recognize that the behavior is a little different and they don't know how to respond to it and don't recognize it as perhaps autism and, you know, just get angry at the person or write them off. Are there things that you could tell us that maybe we could kind of intuit things a little bit better when we encounter these things?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. A lot of times in society, we maybe notice someone's behavior is a little different, but can't quite put a label on that person. And I think, and we don't necessarily need to put a label on that person either. I always look at an individual's behavior and if I have an interaction with them and something happens, I want to A, make sure that they have their needs met and have used whatever coping strategies they need to use so that we can ensure we can move on in a situation. And so I'm going to defer to them to see what needs to be done. If something needs to be facilitated by me in that interaction to help them get back to where we can have a therapeutic or a calm, productive interaction, then I will do those things, even if it means that I remove myself from that immediate environment so that they can have some space. I may take measures to do that.
Well, you are a wealth of knowledge, and we will just have to have you back, Jenna Wiersma with Bartlett Regional Hospital. Good luck with your program, and please do come back.
Oh, thank you so much. And thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. And I hope you have a great day.
All right. Thanks so much for joining us. And we are out of time on Juno Afternoon. Thank you very much for being here with us. Have a great weekend.